Hey, future doctors. Welcome back to Spoonful of Sugar. We have an amazing episode in store for you today on a much-needed topic. Let's let the host introduce themselves and take it away.
Hey, future doctors. Thanks for tuning in to Spoonful of Sugar, a podcast made for medical students by medical students to help the medicine go down. My name is Vivian Zong. I'm a student at Western University of Health Sciences, and I will be your host today. Today, we will be discussing congenital GI diseases, as this is a heavily tested topic on both steps 1 and 2. This is going to be an interactive session where I will be asking you all questions throughout this podcast. I will be pausing to give you some time to think about the questions. And with that, let's have some fun. So let's start this podcast off with, what is the most common congenital GI pathology? It would be Meckel's diverticulum. In Meckel's diverticulum, there is an outpouching of the small bowel, usually in the mid to distal ileum. This is often due to a persistent remnant of the Vitellin duct. Do you all remember what the Vitellin duct connects in utero? The Vitellin duct in utero connects the midgut to the yolk sac, which usually obliterates spontaneously in weeks 5 to 9 of gestation. Meckel's diverticulum is a true diverticulum, which means that it contains all layers of the bowel wall, which includes the mucosa, the submucosa, and the muscular layer. You can compare and contrast this with colonic diverticula, which are false diverticula, which means that not all layers of the bowel wall are involved. Meckel's diverticula often contain ectopic gastric tissue and sometimes can also have pancreatic tissue too. How does Meckel's diverticulum usually present? Meckel's diverticula are usually asymptomatic. It is often an incidental finding on imaging or surgery. It can present at any age, but usually they present under 10 years old. If it is symptomatic, what is the most common symptom? That's right, painless bleeding. The ectopic gastric tissue may also secrete acid, which can lead to symptoms of ulceration, pain, and bleeding. There is a special rule that's associated with Meckel's diverticula. Do you remember what that is? Yes, it's called the rule of twos. Do you remember what the rule of twos consists of? The rule of twos says that 2% of the population are affected with Meckel's diverticula. There is a male-to-female ratio of 2 to 1. They occur within 2 feet from the ileocecal valve, and they are usually 2 inches in size. Diagnosis of Meckel's diverticula is with a technetium scan. In this type of scan, a tracer is taken up by gastric cells in the diverticulum. Diagnosis of Meckel's diverticulum will show 2 dark spots on the scan, with 1 being the stomach and the other being the ectopic gastric tissue in the intestine. If a patient is symptomatic, the treatment is surgery. If the patient is asymptomatic, the treatment is controversial. Some people say to observe and others say to proceed with surgery. Next, let's talk about some herniation topics. So let's say a newborn presents with herniation of intestines midlined through the umbilicus that is covered by peritoneum. What is this called? This would be an omphalocele. So what causes this disorder? So omphaloceles occur due to the persistence of normal herniation of the organs that occurs around week 6 of development. By week 12 of gestation, the organs rotate and actually return back to the abdominal cavity. Omphaloceles rarely involve the liver herniating out of the body. Omphaloceles also are associated with other disorders like the trisomies, such as Edwards, Patau, and Down syndrome, as well as Beckwith-Wiedemann syndrome, which is a big baby with a big tongue, as well as hypoglycemia and ear pits. Some other associated conditions are congenital heart defects, orofacial clefts, and neural tube defects. The treatment for this is surgical closure. So let's say a newborn presented with herniation of intestines just to the right of the umbilicus, with no peritoneal sac covering the organs. What would this be? This would be gastroschisis. Gastroschisis is an extrusion of bowel through an abdominal wall defect that is usually to the right of midline. This happens because of an incomplete closure of the abdominal wall, allowing bowel to herniate out of the abdominal cavity. What is one maternal lab finding that you will see in moms that are pregnant with babies with gastroschisis? That would be high maternal AFP. On ultrasound, you would see free-floating bowel and an amniotic sac. Some notes to contrast with omphalocele are that gastroschisis is not associated with other disorders like omphaloceles are, as well as the liver can herniate out of the body cavity in gastroschisis, unlike omphaloceles, where they do not. So what are some of the complications of gastroschisis? Some of the complications are bowel ischemia or necrosis, as well as atretic or necrotic bowel, requiring surgical removal and leading to short gut syndrome. Treatment for this is the same as omphalocele. It is also surgical closure. Next, let's say a newborn comes in with difficulty breathing, and on chest x-ray, you see abdominal organs in the chest. What is this? This would be congenital diaphragmatic hernia. So this happens when there is a developmental defect of the diaphragm due to defective formation of the pleuroperitoneal membrane, which divides the pleural and the peritoneal cavities. This causes a hole in the diaphragm, which allows the abdominal organs to herniate into the chest cavity. When there is in utero herniation, this can lead to pulmonary hypoplasia and underdevelopment of the lungs, since your abdominal organs are compressing the lungs in the chest. This disorder is important to catch because it can lead to fetal demise. What is the diagnostic test in utero? For diagnosis in utero, it would be ultrasound. What about the imaging modality for diagnosis at birth? It would be chest x-ray. And just like the presentation in this clinical vignette, you would see abdominal organs in the chest on chest x-ray. Once you diagnose this, what would be the appropriate initial next best step for treatment? You would want to initially stabilize and place the patient on mechanical ventilation. The definitive treatment would be surgery to fix the diaphragmatic hernia. Next, let's talk about malrotation. What is malrotation? Malrotation is when the embryonic gut fails to rotate normally, which leads to improper positioning of the bowel with the small intestine on the right side of the abdomen and the large intestine on the left. Board exams love to mention that imaging reveals the appendix or the cecum is in the right upper quadrant instead of the right lower quadrant that it should be. What is the most common presentation of malrotation in babies? That would be midgut volvulus. In midgut volvulus, the small bowel, usually the ileum, twists around the superior mesenteric artery, which causes a small bowel obstruction, which can cut off blood supply and lead to infarction. What are some of the signs and symptoms of this? It most often presents in a baby that is 3 to 7 days old with bilious vomiting, mild abdominal distension, and blood in the stool. What is the best initial imaging test to do in this newborn with suspected malrotation? You would want to do an abdominal x-ray. It can be normal in early stages, but it helps to exclude perforation. What is the best diagnostic imaging test to do? That would be an upper GI series with contrast. You would see a corkscrew appearance of the proximal small bowel. Fibrous adhesions of the peritoneum can also form due to the malrotation that can cause duodenal obstruction. What are these adhesions called? These adhesions are called LADS bands. LADS bands can cause compression of the duodenum, which can make the small intestine twist on itself, which will cut off blood supply and result in infarction. The intestine twisting on itself is called what? That would be volvulus. What imaging modality do you want to use to diagnose volvulus? You would want to do an upper GI series and introduce contrast through a nasogastric tube. The treatment for this is an urgent surgery called LADS procedure. This surgery removes adhesions and the appendix and puts the small bowel on the right and the colon on the left. Next, what if a one-year-old comes in with episodic abdominal pain, current jelly stools, and a history of Meckel's diverticulum, and on physical exam has a palpable sausage-like mass in the right upper quadrant? This would be intussusception. Intussusception is the telescoping of one part of the bowel into another, often near the ileocecal junction. What would you see on ultrasound? On ultrasound, you would see a target sign. What is the preferred diagnostic modality? That would be contrast, aka barium enema or an air enema. These are both diagnostic as well as therapeutic, but ultrasound can also make the diagnosis if you see a target sign. Some of the risk factors of intussusception are history of Meckel's diverticulum or some severe GI infection. Another thing to watch out for is to make sure that you don't give the rotavirus vaccine to kids with a history of intussusception. You most commonly see this in kids younger than 2 years old with abdominal pain, GI bleeding, causing current jelly stools, which is a mix of blood and mucus. The abdominal pain is colicky, which means it comes and goes, and you will see kids pull their knees to their chest during these episodes. What are the underlying lesions called that often lead to intussusception? They are called lead points. These are points that can cause intestine to become trapped and dragged when peristalsis occurs. Some examples of lead points that predispose people to intussusception are Meckel's diverticulum, as I mentioned before, lymphoid hyperplasia in viral gastroenteritis, as well as enteric adenovirus infection. In adults, the most common cause of lead points is a tumor. Now let's talk about atresias. What exactly is an atresia? It's a closed or absent opening that can occur anywhere along the GI tract. So, what is the most common type of atresia? That would be a duodenal atresia. So, how do duodenal atresias present? It would most commonly be a newborn who presents in the first 24 to 48 hours of life with bilious projectile vomiting after their first feeding. Early in development, the duodenum occludes and the patency is restored by recanalization. So the problem with duodenal atresia is there is a failure of duodenal recanalization. About 30 to 40% of these patients with duodenal atresia also have associated Down syndrome. Diagnosis is done by X-ray. So, what would you usually see on X-ray? On X-ray, you would see the double bubble sign. The two hypoechoic bubbles that you would see are the dilated stomach and the dilated duodenum, with a tight pylorus in the middle with no distal gas. Treatment for duodenal atresia involves first a nasogastric suction to decompress the bowels and then to give fluids for stabilization. Definitive treatment is surgery to correct the obstruction by removing the atretic part of the duodenum. another type of atresia in the GI tract that is less common than duodenal atresia is jejunal ileal atresia. This happens due to vascular disruption leading to ischemic necrosis of the intestines while the baby is still developing in utero. Necrotic tissue is resorbed, leaving the blind ends of the bowel. The bowel distal to the blind end may be curled, which is called apple peel atresia. What is the definitive X-ray finding in jejunal ileal atresia? That would be the triple bubble sign. The third bubble is due to the jejunal distension. The treatment for jejunal ileal atresia is similar to duodenal atresia, and it would be surgery to remove the obstruction. Next, what if a 3-week-old newborn presents with jaundice, conjugated hyperbilirubinemia, pale stools, dark urine, and elevated AST and ALT? This would be biliary atresia. Biliary atresia is when there is an obstruction of the biliary ducts in newborns. Either the biliary ducts do not form or they degenerate early in life. It usually presents about 2 to 8 weeks after birth. What is the best initial imaging test to do? That would be ultrasound. You would see either abnormal, small, or absent gallbladder with an absent common bile duct with no other causes of obstruction. The treatment for biliary atresia is a surgery called the Kasai procedure, which is also called hepatoporoenterostomy. In this surgery, a channel is created for bile drainage using the small intestine. This is followed by treatment with ursodeoxycholic acid, which modifies the balance of bile acids to protect the newly formed channel. Most patients will eventually need liver transplants. Next, let's talk about esophageal atresia, which is also known as esophageal narrowing. Esophageal atresia most commonly occurs along with tracheoesophageal fistula, which both derive from the foregut embryologically. In esophageal atresia with tracheoesophageal fistula, the proximal esophagus does not connect to the stomach, leading to polyhydramnios in utero due to the baby's not being able to swallow fluid and an accumulation of excess amniotic fluid. What is the typical presentation of esophageal atresia with tracheoesophageal fistula? These patients usually present with drooling, choking, and vomiting due to secretions accumulating in the blind-ended pouch of the proximal esophagus. The symptoms occur with feeds because food cannot pass into the stomach. What is the best initial test to do? That would be chest X-ray. You would see the nasogastric tube curled since it cannot pass into the stomach. One of the major complications associated with this disorder is reflux, which can lead to aspiration pneumonia, ultimately leading to respiratory distress. The treatment for this is surgery. Often patients with a tracheoesophageal fistula may also have the Vactoral association. So it is important to be aware of these associations. Let's talk about the Vactoral association. This includes V. V is for vertebral defects like narrowing of the vertebral column or spina bifida. A is for anal atresia or imperforate anus, which means no opening of the anus. C is for cardiac defects, with VSD and ASD being the two most common. Some other cardiac defects that are less common are PDA, which is patent ductus arteriosus, tetralogy of Fallot, and hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which is due to the malformation of the left side of the heart, preventing blood from flowing normally through the left side of the heart to the rest of the body. T is for tracheoesophageal fistula. R is for renal anomalies, which could include a missing or a malformed kidney, as well as an increased risk for urinary tract infections. L is for limb abnormalities, such as absent or displaced thumbs, extra digits, also called polydactyly, fusion of digits, which is called syndactyly, or forearm defects. It is important to screen for associated conditions since there is a high correlation between tracheoesophageal fistulas and these avactoral association defects. What if a 5-week-old patient comes in with projectile non-bilious vomiting in a palpable olive-like mass in the epigastrium with a history of being a first-born male and having been exposed to erythromycin or azithromycin in the first 2 weeks of his life? What would you say the diagnosis is? This would be pyloric stenosis. Pyloric stenosis happens when there is hypertrophy of the pylorus, which is surrounded by smooth muscle sphincter that hypertrophies, leading to a gastric outlet obstruction. Patients usually present in their first 3 to 6 weeks of life having what is called hungry vomiting, where right after the patient vomits, they are hungry immediately afterwards. This is because the food never really gets into their intestines. Would there be some sort of metabolic or respiratory acidosis or alkalosis involved? Yes, there would be a hypokalemic metabolic alkalosis. There is low chloride due to the loss of HCl due to vomiting, and there is also low potassium due to volume depletion, which in turn upregulates the RAS system, leading to an increased aldosterone level and therefore more potassium excretion. What is the diagnostic imaging of choice in pyloric stenosis? That would be ultrasound. On ultrasound, you should see a target sign or donut sign. This is hypertrophied hypoechoic muscle at the pylorus. If the ultrasound does not show anything, what is the next best imaging to do? It would be an upper GI contrast X-ray, and you would expect to see a string sign, which is an elongated thin pyloric canal. What would be the best treatment for pyloric stenosis? It would be volume resuscitation for the vomiting and then a surgery called pyloromyotomy to relieve the gastric outlet obstruction. So let's say we had a 5-day-old newborn who still has not passed a stool and on physical exam has abdominal distension, bilious vomiting, and on digital rectal exam there is a positive squirt and blast sign. This patient has Hirschsprung's disease. This is a congenital motor disease of the colon where ganglion cells that are derived from neural crest cells fail to migrate properly to the GI tract. What is the gold standard for diagnosis of this disorder? It would be a rectal suction biopsy, which shows no ganglion cells. The biopsy needs to be full thickness, including the submucosa. The rectum is always involved in Hirschsprung's disease. What would be some imaging that you would want to order? An abdominal X-ray would show a dilated bowel with no air in the rectum, and a contrast enema would show a transition zone between the normal proximal distended bowel and the abnormal distal bowel that is empty. The contrast enema can only be done after the X-ray has shown that there are no perforations. What other syndromes are we worried about in this patient? It would be Down syndrome. Trisomy 21 has some high-yield associations, such as Hirschsprung's disease, duodenal atresia, annular pancreas, endocardial cushion defects, early-onset Alzheimer's, and atlantoaxial instability. What would be the treatment for Hirschsprung's disease? It would be colon resection. You would have to remove the part of the colon without ganglion cells. What about if we had a newborn with a history of cystic fibrosis and still has not passed a stool by day 6? Also has bilious vomiting and abdominal distension on physical exam. This would be meconium ileus, which is more common in kids with cystic fibrosis. The meconium becomes too thick, so a plug forms and causes small bowel obstruction. On abdominal x-ray, what would you expect to see? You would see what is called the soap bubble sign, which is meconium mixed with air and dilated bowel loops. What about what you would see on a contrast enema x-ray? You would see unused small colon with only a partial small bowel filling and pellets of meconium. What is the treatment for meconium ileus? First, you want to do a nasogastric decompression of the bowel. Then you want to do a gastrographin enema, which is hyperosmolar, so it draws fluid into the bowel, breaking up the meconium. If the baby is hemodynamically unstable, though, you need to do surgery immediately. Now, what if we had a neonate born at 28 weeks gestation who presents with bilious vomiting and bloody diarrhea, who had her first course of formula 5 days ago? On physical exam, the baby has abdominal distension, and on abdominal x-ray, there is free air under the diaphragm. What would the diagnosis be? This would be necrotizing enterocolitis. And since the x-ray showed air under the diaphragm, that means there is an abdominal perforation, which means that this patient needs to go to surgery immediately and get antibiotics to prevent infection. What is the highest yield risk factor for development of necrotizing enterocolitis? That would be enteral feeding in a premature baby. Just like we saw in this clinical vignette, she was a baby who was born premature and just started feeding. What is another classic finding on imaging in patients with necrotizing enterocolitis? That would be pneumatosis intestinalis, which is air in the wall of the bowel. The treatment for this would be to put the baby on NPO, TPN if the patient is necrotic, antibiotics, and surgery to resect the necrotic bowel. Let's end with some high-yield congenital pancreatic disorders. There are two that are the most common. Can you think of what they are? Annular pancreas and pancreas divisum. Let's first talk about annular pancreas. An annular pancreas is a congenital anomaly of the ventral pancreatic duct. A normal pancreas usually forms when the ventral and dorsal bud fuse together. In an annular pancreas, the ventral pancreatic bud wraps around, forming a ring around the duodenum. Most cases are asymptomatic, but it can present with small bowel obstruction and recurrent pancreatitis. Diagnosis is done with an upper GI series or a CT scan. What is the treatment for annular pancreas? It's a surgery called duodeno-duodenostomy. In this surgery, the duodenum is modified to bypass the annulus and pancreatic tissue surrounding it. One key point is to make sure you don't resect any of the pancreatic tissue because this may cause a fistula between the pancreas and the duodenum. This can lead to recurrent bowel obstruction or recurrent bouts of pancreatitis. The other pancreatic disorder is pancreas divisum. This is less common than annular pancreas, but is still tested on board exams. Pancreas divisum happens when the dorsal and ventral pancreatic buds do not fuse and remain two separate ducts. This is also often asymptomatic, but may cause recurrent pancreatitis due to pancreatic ducts not draining normally. The treatment for this is either surgery or endoscopic therapy. So that's all for congenital GI pathologies. Let's do a quick summary touching on some important points. Meckel's diverticulum is the most common congenital GI disorder. It is a true diverticula, meaning all three layers are involved in the outpouching, and it is due to the persistence of the vitelline duct. Remember the rule of twos for Meckles, which is highly tested and includes affecting 2% of the population, with a male to female ratio of 2 to 1, being within 2 feet of the ileocecal valve and usually 2 inches in size. Diagnosis is with a technetium scan, and treatment is reserved for symptomatic patients with surgery. Omphalocele is a herniation through the midline in the umbilicus, covered by a sac, and is associated with trisomies. This happens due to persistence of organ herniation that normally returns to the abdominal cavity in utero. Gastroschisis is a herniation of intestines lateral to the umbilicus and is not covered by a sac and is not associated with any other disorders. The treatment for both of these conditions is surgical closure. Congenital diaphragmatic hernia is when there is a defect in the pleuroperitoneal membrane causing a hole in the diaphragm, allowing abdominal organs to move into the chest cavity. This can compress the lungs, leading to pulmonary hypoplasia and potentially fetal death. Diagnosis in utero is with ultrasound, and diagnosis at birth is with chest x-ray, and you would see abdominal organs in the chest. Treatment is by stabilizing and placing the patient on mechanical ventilation, with a definitive treatment being surgery to fix the diaphragmatic hernia. Malrotation is when the embryonic gut fails to rotate, leading to improper bowel positioning. Malrotation can lead to the formation of Lad's bands, which can compress the duodenum, causing the small intestine to twist on itself, leading to infarction. This twisting is called volvulus and is diagnosed by an upper GI series with contrast. The treatment for this is Lad's procedure, which removes adhesions, the appendix, and places the small intestine on the right side of the abdomen and the large intestine on the left. Intussusception is caused by telescoping of one part of the bowel into another and is often near the ileocecal junction. Some diagnostic tools that are used are ultrasound, which you can see a target sign, or contrast, aka barium enema or air enema, which is also therapeutic. Lead points, such as Meckel's diverticulum and enteric adenovirus infection, are risk factors that can cause intussusception. Duodenal atresia is the most common GI tract atresia. It is a closed or absent opening of the duodenum due to the failure of duodenal recanalization. Diagnosis is done by x-ray, and you would see a double bubble sign. Treatment involves first using a nasogastric suction and providing fluids, with a definitive treatment being surgery to remove the atretic part of the duodenum. Jejunal ileal atresia is less common than duodenal atresia. The pathophysiology behind this disorder is due to vascular disruption leading to ischemic necrosis of intestines while the baby is still developing. The bowel distal to the blind end may be curled and can be called apple peel atresia. On x-ray, you will find a triple bubble sign. The treatment is also surgery to remove the obstructive or atretic part of bowel. Biliary atresia occurs when there is an obstruction of the biliary ducts in newborns. Diagnosed by ultrasound, where you will see either an abnormal, small, or absent gallbladder with an absent common bile duct. The treatment is a surgery called the Kasai procedure, which is also known as hepatoporterenterostomy, where a channel is created for bile drainage. Then, ursodeoxycholic acid is given to protect the newly made channel, and eventually many patients will require liver transplants. Esophageal atresia most commonly occurs with tracheoesophageal fistula. This occurs when the proximal esophagus does not connect to the stomach. The best initial test is a chest x-ray, where you will see the nasogastric tube curling and not passing into the stomach. A tracheoesophageal fistula is also associated with the Vactoral Association, which includes vertebral defects, anal atresia, cardiac defects, renal anomalies, and limb abnormalities. The treatment for esophageal atresia is surgery. Pyloric stenosis is due to the hypertrophy of the pyloric sphincter, leading to gastric outlet obstruction. On physical exam, there will be a palpable olive-like mass in the epigastrium. Some risk factors are being a firstborn male and being exposed to erythromycin or azithromycin in the first 2 weeks of life. On ultrasound, you will see a target or donut signed, and this is due to hypertrophied hypoechoic muscle of the pylorus. If the ultrasound doesn't show any findings, you can do an upper GI contrast x-ray, where you would see the string sign, which is an elongated, thin pyloric canal. Treatment is fluid resuscitation and then a surgery called a pyloromyotomy to relieve the gastric outlet obstruction. In Hirschsprung's disease, a newborn who has not passed stool yet with a positive squirt or blast sign, the gold standard for diagnosis is a rectal suction biopsy, which is specific in biopsying all layers, including the submucosa, where you would find no ganglion cells. An abdominal x-ray would show dilated bowel with no air in the rectum, and a contrast enema would show a transition zone between the normal proximal distended bowel and the abnormal empty distal bowel. Treatment would be colon resection to remove the part of the colon with no ganglion cells. Meconium ileus is commonly seen in cystic fibrosis patients. The meconium is so thick in these patients that it forms a plug, leading to small bowel obstruction. On abdominal x-ray, you would see the soap bubble sign, which is meconium mixed with air in the dilated bowel loops. On contrast enema x-ray, you would see unused small colon with only partial small bowel filling and pellets of meconium. Treatment includes first doing a nasogastric decompression, then doing a gastrographin enema to draw fluid into the bowel to break up the meconium. If the patient is hemodynamically unstable, surgery is required. Necrotizing enterocolitis is common in premature babies with enteric feeding. On x-ray, if there is air under the diaphragm, surgery is required immediately, as well as antibiotics. Another classic finding on imaging is pneumatosis intestinalis, which is air in the bowel walls. Treatment is to make sure baby is NPO, TPN if necrotic, with antibiotics and surgery to resect the necrotic bowel. An annular pancreas is due to the ventral pancreatic bud forming a ring around the duodenum. In pancreas divisum, the dorsal and ventral pancreatic buds do not fuse and remain two separate ducts. To diagnose both these, an upper GI series or CT scan is done. Surgery for annular pancreas is a duodeno-duodenostomy, which modifies the duodenum to bypass the annulus and pancreatic tissue surrounding it. The treatment for pancreas divisum is surgery or endoscopic therapy. Some causes of bilious vomiting are GI atresias like duodenal and jejunal ileal atresias, malrotation and volvulus, necrotizing enterocolitis, meconium ileus, Hirschsprung's disease, and incarcerated hernia. Some causes of non-bilious vomiting are pyloric stenosis, intussusception, GERD, infections, and milk protein sensitivity. And with that, we conclude our congenital GI pathology podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you found this episode helpful, please subscribe to our podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, visit our website at spoonfulofsugar.org and post them under the link for this episode. Good luck with studying, and remember that if you ever have an SOS moment while studying, Spoonful of Sugar is always here to help the medicine go down.